Some Overwhelming Question. A Critical Role fanfic, written by Jade Saber. Read by Black Glass and
Balecaz as Caleb, Knott, Ford, and Guard.
Chapter 1. There will be time, there will be time, to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be time to murder and create, and time for all the works and days of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate. Time for you, and time for me, and time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions, before the taking of a toast and tea. Would it have been worthwhile to have bitten off the matter with a smile, to have squeezed the universe into a ball, to roll it toward some overwhelming question, to say, I am Lazarus, come from the dead, come back to tell you all, I shall tell you all. If one, settling a pillow by her head, should say, that is not what I meant at all. That is not it at all. T.S. Eliot, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. They sailed into Nicodranas on a pirate ship. So really, things could have been much worse. The Zalezo confined them to their ship while they checked out their story, and in the meantime, they offered them a job that wasn't too bad, as far as jobs went. Go to a fancy party, do a little sneaking, a little investigating, maybe disarm a couple magical traps. Maybe come out with a little evidence for the Zalezo, and any whispers of any complaints against them from the whole docks fiasco would be, poof, gone. Granted, it still didn't solve the problem of the death warrant out on her head, but they also thought the little blue tiefling had died at the docks, so it all balanced out. They only had 4 invites to the party, and she and Knott were the best investigators in the group. Like, the best. So of course they had to go. Bo really wanted in, and since she missed out on the Avantika raid, they graciously invited her. And then Caleb reminded everyone they had set magical traps, so he rounded out the group. Ford tried to argue that Bo couldn't cast his guy self and he could, so maybe he'd be a better fit. But she'd stormed out, and returned an hour later wearing a fancy party dress with her hair curled in ringlets, and held out a jaunty hand as she introduced herself as Tracy, from the Empire. And he had to concede the point. Yasha didn't want to go, of course, and Jester promised to draw Caduceus lots of pictures so that he would know what a fancy party looked like, and he seemed all right. Well, he always seemed all right, so long as nobody was drowning, or dying, or murdering other people, and his mood had been much improved by their return to the continent. A few disguise selves later, Caleb in his, I'm me, but wearing nice black clothes, disguise, that Jester thought made him look kind of like a vampire. Jester as the buxom blonde elf version of herself, not as a cloaked halfling, and they were in. Half of Nicodranas' upper crust were present, which meant it wasn't nearly as fancy as a party as it was trying to be. But there were magical lights, and musicians playing from the upper balconies, and loads of yummy food.
Not,
Jester said, when she realized she couldn't see the goblin anymore. And sure enough, she was discreetly emptying an entire tray of pastries into her mouth under a table. Not swallowed.
Some.
And offered several very nice eclairs that Jester dropped into her haversack. Right, Bo said. So the food's safe. Thanks for figuring that out.
Would it not be?
Knott said, incredulous.
Who throws a party and poisons their own food? I mean, nobody puts this much effort into a party only to be known as the guy who gave half the city food poisoning.
She has a point,
Caleb said, though it wasn't clear which she he meant.
Anyway, we are going to get started, yeah?
Should we mingle?
Jester asked. She saw several of her mother's clients, and was kind of hoping maybe to hear them talking about her, or to start seeds of praise among them. Or maybe she'd just sidle over to the clock on the wall and set it back a couple of hours. Or maybe... Not all of us, Bo said. We don't want them noticing when we all go missing. I'll go talk to... what's his name? See if I can get any more information about his safe out of him.
Is that wise?
Caleb said.
You just said we didn't. There she goes,
he said, as Bo sailed through the room with an effortless grace that belied the fact that she was wearing 5 more layers of clothing than usual.
So what?
Nat said.
We just wait?
We should have discussed a signal,
Caleb said, frowning.
We've got a little time, Jester said, looking at the clock again. It's been what, 10 minutes? And we can all cast the spell again if we need to. These eclairs are really good. Want one?
No, thank you,
Caleb said, not even looking at her, doing his best impression of a wallflower, without actually being against the wall, glaring at the rest of the room, looking like he was attending a funeral. Everything else was light and glowing and magical. Not like real magic, but better. The magic of mutual suspension of disbelief. Of everyone pretending that everything in the world was as wonderful and gay and bright as this ballroom. Trust Caleb to stick to the shadows. She sighed. They all stood awkwardly by the table, not really talking, watching as Beau waited her turn in line to talk to the host. And then the music changed, and Jester seized her chance.
Caleb,
she said, drawing out the first syllable of his name. But he was already looking at her, as if he'd heard the music too.
May I have this dance?
He raised his hand and hesitated.
Oh, go on,
said Nat, around a mouthful of one of those tasty meatballs on a stick.
She hasn't even started talking to him. We've got time. Scout around while you're out there.
Caleb didn't even have a chance to respond before Jester seized his hand and led him to the edge of the dance floor, watching the other couples whirl by, engaging when to make their entry.
Last time we waltzed, she said, you were super drunk.
Yes,
he said, eyes on the other dancers, hands still on hers.
So this time, she said, I expect... Oh,
she said, as he pressed his other hand into her back and skillfully slipped into the sea of dancers. And for a moment, she couldn't catch her breath as they fell into the 1-2-3 rhythm, trying to land her free hand on his shoulder where it belonged. His arm seemed impossibly rigid, and yet his grip on her hand was gentle, as he waited for her to get her feet beneath her, his steps perfectly timed, without any stumbling at all. After half a turn around the floor, she finally caught up, and as she looked up from her feet, she saw him halfway between a smile and a smirk, watching her.
All right, she said. I'm impressed.
Thank you,
he said cordially, his hand gripping hers a little more firmly, as he started to lead her.
Who taught you to dance so well?
She asked, allowing him the lead, resting against the press of his palm into her shoulder blade, as they rotated.
My teachers,
he said, and she laughed, and he smiled again. Then he looked beyond her and said,
Ah, Beauregard has made it to her mark.
Oh, good,
she said, and then she dropped her chin and pouted up at him.
Did your teachers not tell you it's rude to look at other ladies when you have a partner?
Ah, yes, of course,
he said. But this smile was a little thinner, a little strained as he looked back to her. No good at all. And so for a minute or two, she simply allowed him to spin her around the room, smiling to herself as now and then he glanced at her, ranging from confusion at her silence to a mounting suspicion that made her struggle not to giggle. But then the song was over, and they broke apart, and he sketched the cutest little perfunctory bow that she returned with what she thought was the cutest little perfunctory curtsy. And then, to her surprise, he offered her his arm, and so she accepted it, and allowed him to escort her back to the corner where they'd left Nat, doing their best to avoid running into people, and possibly spoiling the illusion. Though his clothes appeared to be velvet, she felt the scratch of wool whenever her arm pressed against his, and though he looked like death warmed over, he was, well, warm, which was nice, and he didn't smell bad, which was mostly because they'd all, well, all but not, scrubbed vigorously in a back alley while she cast Create Water over their heads. The water had been cold, because of course the traveler thought it was funny, but the results had been worth it. Nat was not in the corner.
Color me shocked,
Caleb commented, fiddling with a wire as he looked about the room.
Beauregard is still engaged.
She looked, and sure enough there was Beau, twirling a curl around her finger,
and shooting desperate looks across the room, whenever the party host laughed at what was presumably his own joke. He had a hand on her arm, and as she watched, it slowly worked its way up her shoulder, and she was oddly proud of Beau for not breaking it, though of course that would have been fun too, but maybe not the best idea.
"Murder was not on the to-do list, yeah?"
Caleb said, still standing beside her, rigid again, her hand still on his arm.
"No," she said. "But who knows? Maybe she can come back later and finish the job."
He didn't laugh at that, unfortunately. But before he could get too glowery, his gaze drifted off to the side, in a way she recognized as him listening to something from Nat. And he said,
"Yeah."
And then a few breaths later,
"Yes."
And a breath or two after that,
"No, wait."
"Is something wrong?"
she asked, squeezing his arm to get his attention. His arm fell to his side immediately, and she held up both her hands in apology. And then he blinked and relaxed and said,
"She thinks she found an opening and wants to get past. God said something about looking for the toilet."
"Well, she's not investigating without me," Jester said,
taking two steps before realizing she didn't know which way to go.
"This way,"
Caleb said, and she trailed behind him closely enough to rock on her toes when he stopped dead and said,
"But what about Bo?"
"You stay here with her," Jester said,
torn between shoving around him and still not knowing where she was going.
"Magical traps,"
he said, and she snorted.
"Then just send her a message."
"Saying what?"
"Oh, you know. Sorry, had to go. Come find us when you can. We'll check in. You can respond to this message."
And she stepped past him, heading towards the nearest door. He hissed behind her, much like Frumpkin. And a moment later, he caught her arm and said,
"No, this way."
And pulled her towards what looked to be just a tapestry on the wall. And then she saw a servant come out from behind it with drinks. And sure enough, there was a passage behind it.
"There you are,"
said Nat, from somewhere near her feet.
"Took you long enough. I scouted ahead. Let's go."
"Frumpkin could have..."
Nat waved him away as they ducked into the passageway.
"You look like you were having fun,"
she whispered.
"I took care of it."
Caleb made a disgruntled noise in his throat that made Jester want to giggle. But the passageway was dark, lit only by torches every 20 feet, and she concentrated on watching behind them as Nat led them through 2 or 3 intersections before turning and leading them up a narrow staircase that came out on another dark passageway. And then after another 20 or so feet, Nat pushed against a section that turned out to be the back of another tapestry, and they were at the end of a hallway, this one with wood paneling, lit by candles every few feet, and lined with portraits and suits of armor and large ceramics, with one huge plush rug running down the center of it. The tip of a large scrolled banister was barely visible at the other end.
"I think these are the living quarters,"
Nat was saying, as they pressed against the tapestry.
"So his room should be one of these doors close to us."
Caleb was staring at the suits of armor, looking even gloomier than normal.
"These are almost all certainly magical,"
he murmured.
"We don't have time for your ritual magic," Jester whispered. "Just cast a spell and find out."
"But we have to choose,"
he whispered back.
"Because I can only dispel so much, you know, and fighting suits of armor would make too much noise. But what if there's something else too and we don't have Beauregard with us and I really don't want to die here?"
"Bo's still busy, but she thinks she can get up here,"
Nat said, drawing a wire away from her mouth.
"Through the front,"
Caleb muttered, uneasy.
"If she brings him up with her, there will almost certainly be murder."
"Tell her to tell him she needs to use the toilet," Jester whispered.
"I mean, she's probably already thought of that,"
Nat said.
"It's kind of a classic."
"Tell her to tell him she's not sure the fish is good, and then to just run away," she said, "and that you'll be there to hide her."
"The suits are all magical,"
Caleb announced in a whisper.
"And so is the rug. But it looks like if we stay to the side of it, and don't touch that urn over there, if we just inch along the wall like so, that one."
And he pointed to the suit nearest them, opposite the first otherwise plain-looking door across the hall.
"Is safe, so I am guessing it is the room we want."
All right, I'll go get her,"
Nat said, putting the hood of her cloak farther down her forehead.
"Just stay here and don't move."
Roger that,
Caleb said, and a moment later she was gone, the tapestry barely shifting behind them in her wake. Jester was very good at being quiet when the occasion called for it, but there was nobody nearby, and Caleb's breathing was going a little shallow as he kept staring at the armor. So she whispered,
Is there anything magical in the room?
What?
He whispered back, still staring at the armor.
The room, she said, still whispering. The room we're trying to get into. Can you see through the door?
No,
he said, in the same shallow, startled whisper.
It's a door.
Yes, but your spell, she said. Can your spell see through the door?
Oh,
he said, shaking his head a bit, and then finally looking away from the suits of armor and their menacing pole arms.
Yes, yes, this. Oh boy.
Magic?
Lots of magic,
he said, squinting.
Some abjuration, yes, some... A little too far. I'll look again when we get in. Hey,
said a voice, deep and loud.
Someone here?
Shit, Jester said. Behind the tapestry. Let's go, go, go.
She slid her hand between the tapestry and the wall and pushed it back so that she could duck behind it until she reached the opening behind it. And in that moment, she heard the very loud thunk, oomph, of Caleb walking straight into the wall. She ducked back out in time to grab his hand and pull him to her to keep him from stepping on the rug as he stumbled back. But before she could drag him with her, the voice said,
Hey, you two, what are you?
She looked up at Caleb, and he was much nearer than he usually liked to be, and his eyes were wide, and his free hand was fumbling in his pocket as his mouth moved. But there wasn't time, and he was right there. So she did the first thing that came to her mind. She kissed him. To be more accurate, she grabbed a handful of hair on the back of his head and pulled his mouth to hers, which really just resulted in her getting a lipful of stubbly mustache that was not quite as coarse as it looked. Oh boy! She never thought about kissing a man with facial hair before, but it was definitely a thing that was definitely happening. At least inasmuch as she was tilting her head this way and that, in what she hoped was an accurate imitation of a passionate kiss, while his lips were apparently frozen together and his arms were limp. So she grabbed them and put them around her waist as best as she was able. And as she wrapped her arms back around his shoulders, he seemed to revive a bit, and she opened one eye long enough to see him close his as he followed her passionate head-tilting lead. But both their lips were pretty firmly closed and not really interacting, and hers was still half on his mustache stubble, and there wasn't really much kissing to be had. At least she didn't think this counted. But then she heard the sound of boots on carpet, and his arms tightened around her, and suddenly they were pressed together, and she felt the heat of him against her chest, felt the careful, calculating way he matched her ridiculous movements. And for a moment, she had an impression of a banked fire waiting for... something.
What?
Said the same voice.
Are you doing?
Caleb withdrew, a welcome relief for her chafed lips, and caught her gaze for a moment, his eyes somewhere between terrified and twinkling. And then he turned his head and said,
I thought that would be obvious.
Over his shoulder, she could just make out what looked like an exasperated house guard, arms crossed, skepticism all over his face.
Uh-huh,
he said.
And what are you doing here?
Well, downstairs is just so crowded, you know, she said, going to flip her hair,
but then remembering that her hands were currently clutching the shoulders of Caleb's definitely not fine velvet coat.
Yeah, and we just wanted a bit of privacy, you know,
Caleb said, casual and smug. Rich, and far too important to have a guard bothering him about his trysts. Confident. Surprisingly hot. Gosh, she was proud of him.
This area's private,
the guard said.
Exactly my point,
he said, not budging an inch. The guard looked torn between being cowed and being more afraid of his boss. So Jester slid her hand down Caleb's arms to fiddle with the lapel of his coat.
Darling, she said, pouting her lip, won't you just send him away? This is taking too long, and I just can't wait much longer.
A muscle in Caleb's cheek twitched. His very red cheek, she noticed now, and she fought a similar twitch. And then his arms were tightening around her waist, pulling her into him as he said,
You are trying the lady's patience.
Jester did her best to look somewhere between desperately horny and super annoyed. Caleb jerked his head toward the hallway.
If you don't mind.
She added a couple of oohs, still toying with his coat, making pouty lips, while the two men stared each other down. And then the guard shook his head in disgust and said,
Here?
Oh, darling, she said, ducking her head against his shirt when she couldn't hide her grin anymore. He was warm, and his heart was hammering, and she rubbed her forehead against him and said,
Oh, surely not here.
And why not?
Caleb said, somewhere above her, his voice a little difficult, somehow, his hands clenching into her sides. She oohed a little more, giggling, sliding her left leg just to the outside of Caleb's, and the guard made a noise of disgust and said, his voice getting a bit fainter as he spoke,
Look, just don't get anything on the rug, oh, for fuck's sake. That's the idea,
Caleb said, and now her shoulders were shaking with giggles as she heard the thump of the guard's boots as he apparently fled back down the hallway. She smushed her nose into Caleb's warm chest and tried not to breathe, lest the giggles escape. Warm and a little scrawny, maybe. She knew he was scrawny, but now she felt it. A little bony. A little underdeveloped. Weeks of bland divine magic food, not helping, she was sure. And gosh, he'd always been fragile, but she felt like she could squeeze him too tightly and just crush him without meaning to. But then his hands were strong, and his fingers were long and a little tickly, now that she thought about it, and their hips were pretty close together. But that wasn't really... It was weird, mostly. And then one of his hands released her, and after another moment, she heard him whisper,
Not.
Is he gone?
She asked, peeking up at the underside of his chin, watching his Adam's apple bob as he swallowed.
Yes, they're almost to the stairs,
he said. And then he looked down at her, and she was looking up at him. And oh gosh, they were close together. Like, really close. Obviously they were close, but it was different with those big blue eyes, suddenly turning the full force of his incisive mind upon her. And oh, traveler, she kissed Caleb. Really badly, too. Oh, she said. And one part of her noticed that he dropped the confident and suave persona, and now looked terrified and questioning. And another part thought that was funny. And a third part, the part feeling his heart hammer against her chin, thought that he was holding on to something, desperately keeping it at bay. And then, of course, there was the part of her trying to figure out a dick joke to break the tension, and another part telling her that maybe she shouldn't talk about dicks when his was right there, and another part saying, Stop thinking about his dick! And another part thinking he should probably let go of her before Nott saw them, and another part wondering if the guard was really gone, and one part was just her heart pounding in her ears, and last of all was a very small soft voice underneath them all saying, Oh. Quiet and still and content, like she wasn't... he said, and maybe he'd said something else. And then his other arm slid from around her, and she instinctively ducked her head and stepped away, and her back hit hard stone, covered in a thin layer of tapestry, not nearly as warm or inviting as... Well, anyway. She looked up, and he was studying her with... Well, he was always intense, but more so, somehow. But as soon as their eyes met, his slid away, and suddenly he wasn't looking at her at all.
So?
Right, she said. And then, before any of the other things she was thinking of to say came out, she said,
So, we should probably just hide behind the tapestry until they get here.
Ah.
He said again.
Yeah, that would be good.
Should have done it from the beginning,
she said, turning away from him, before giving her head a little shake to snap her back from, or to, or... Anyway, behind the tapestry, yes. That's where she was going.
Probably,
he said. And she heard him following her. And then his voice was suddenly very quiet, and very near, his breath tickling the back of her head.
Maybe not.
She put a hand to the stone wall to steady herself, as a shiver went down her spine, the hair on her neck prickling. And when she glanced back to him, he looked Well, he probably wasn't thinking about how well she could see his expression in the mostly dark hallway. And he looked nervous and guilty. And also as if maybe he didn't realize she'd hurt him, maybe. Or maybe not. Or... Quick, quiet footsteps. And then... Hey, said Beau's husky voice, followed shortly by the woman herself. She'd pinned her fancy sleeves up and looked annoyed. But then again, that was just Beau. Sorry we're late.
Oh, no problem at all,
Caleb said. Almost normal. Maybe a bit too fast. And Jester rolled her eyes, so that maybe no one would notice. Anything?
Trouble?
Nod asked, slipping around Beau's skirt. Caleb shook his head, and Jester said,
Oh, just the guard.
Did he see you? Beau said, immediately doing a perimeter check.
Well,
Jester said, looking at Caleb, who was not looking at her.
Yes?
Yes, but I do not think he will be bothering us again,
Caleb said.
Why? Did you kill him?
Nott asked, looking mildly disappointed to have missed the opportunity. We're not supposed to, Beau said.
We didn't kill him, Jester said. We just scared them off, right?
Right,
Caleb said. And they were both looking just past each other, in what had to be the most ridiculously guilty way. Not that she felt guilty. Only it was weird, and it shouldn't have been weird. Or maybe it was that it wasn't weird and should have been, and...
Okay, well...
Nat said, apparently oblivious. Though Beau was looking between the two of them with narrowed eyes, and now Jester thought it would be appropriate to concentrate very hard on Nat's next words.
Let's... go?
Yes,
Caleb said.
Let's.
You two first, Beau said. I still narrowed. Jester and I will bring up the rear.
The suits of armor are magical, except for the one by the room we want,
Caleb said.
And the rug is.
Not told me. Let's go, Beau said. No telling when your guard friend will be back with buddies.
I don't think he will be, Jester said,
hanging back as Caleb followed Nott around the tapestry. Beau looked sidelong at her. But he's not dead?
Nope,
she said, with a cheerful shake of her head. And after another impossibly long second or two, Beau shook her head back and shrugged. Then let's go, she said. And they stepped back into the candlelit armor-infested hallway together. And if she made herself busy staring at the other end of the hall, instead of at anyone else in the party, well, she was just being a really good guard, okay? Okay. It would be okay. End of chapter 1.
Chapter 2. Surprisingly, the rest of the heist did go well. At least the part where they managed to break past several locks and traps and retrieve the papers. The getaway was a little messier, what with having to jump out of a window into a fountain that was of course guarded by a surprised water elemental, who of course whelmed Nott and nearly drowned her. As Beau delivered a devastating series of blows to the monster, Jester scrambled to Nott and was about to heal her when Caleb grabbed her shoulder and said,
Better leave her unconscious. She is just going to scream when she wakes up.
Good point,
Jester said, stabilizing and scooping up the unconscious goblin in her arms instead. And Caleb's hand maybe lingered on her shoulder, maybe not. She certainly didn't notice. They and Beau made their drippingly wet way back to the ship, where once revived, and before even opening her eyes, Nott began hollering a list of all the people she was going to kill, starting with whoever invented water, working her way past various water-based enemies they'd faced, and finally ending with Ford.
I wasn't even there,
he protested.
Don't play innocent with me,
she said, wild-eyed and jabbing a finger in his direction.
You control the seas now or something.
Ford tilted his head, while frowning the particular frown he frowned, when he felt the other person was wrong. But she continued,
You're just as bad as all the rest of them.
That's not really fair. Let it go,
Caleb advised, standing well back from the chaos, arms crossed, half grinning, half wincing.
Let her drink it off. She'll be better in the morning.
Many things were better in the morning. Maybe not Nott's hangover, but the weather and the Zalezo's attitude towards them when they delivered the papers.
Though, of course, the captain was all. This is good. Give us time to gather all the evidence. In the meantime, please stay on your ship. You don't have permission to wander freely.
Which was lame. And then they stationed a guard at the end of the gangway again, which was really lame. She thought about sneaking off the ship and trying to see her mother, but there wasn't a way to get off or get back on unseen that didn't involve jumping off the boat or else trying to talk her way back aboard when she shouldn't have left in the first place. She spent a long time discussing her options with Marius, who seemed less interested in discussing them, really seemed mostly unwilling, though his advice was good, than in trying to persuade her not to get on the Zalezzo's bad side again. Please. He just wanted off the boat, please. He'd be an honest man after this. Please, just don't ruin it. So finally she gave up on leaving the ship by surreptitious means, and spent the lunch hour chatting up the guard himself. But that didn't work either. And by the end she was hungry and frustrated and hot. And so she marched back up the gangway, and stomped across the deck, and stormed her way below decks, and ran straight into Caleb, as he tried to leave the galley at the exact moment she tried to enter it.
"Ugh," she said, exasperated. "Sorry."
"Ow,"
he said weakly, one hand on his chest, wincing. And she was pretty strong, and she knew he was pretty scrawny. And just as she started to feel bad, his eyes opened enough for their gazes to meet. And then they both just stood there, staring at each other. And she was hot, and the air was stifling, and she was hungry, and he was awkward and scrawny, and she could just grab him and...
"Sorry," she said again, almost a mumble, dropping her gaze, brow furrowing as she tried to avoid the long list of things she could do after grabbing him, which wasn't like her, like, at all. But it was weird, and she didn't want it to be weird. But she'd started it, so she'd have to find a way to fix it.
"No problem,"
he said. And he was still a bit winded, but his voice was quiet too. And then, after another moment of her staring at the deck, he mercifully slipped by her without touching her, and the air stirred in his wake, and she closed her eyes and lingered in it. And then she remembered how hungry she was, and went in search of her lunch. She spent the rest of the day mending this and that around the ship, little splinters of wood that mostly didn't matter, and it gave her entirely too much time to think. But she didn't know who to talk to. Thought maybe she could figure this out herself. At one point, she did climb to the top of the crow's nest and scribble in her journal. Mostly doodles of the city below, but a couple of memories, too. And a lot of question marks. But if the traveler had any suggestions, he was keeping them to himself. She ultimately decided that there was only one course of action to take, really. But the timing was delicate. And so she ate dinner with the others, and joked with Nott and Bo, and tried to teach Yasha basic small talk, which failed miserably, but in an entertaining way. And then afterwards, Bo invited her to spar, and Caduceus offered to let her blend her own dead person tea like they'd been talking about. But instead she politely excused herself, lingering until Nott made her way to the powder room for her nightly inventory and nightcap. And then she went and settled in a shadowy corner at the end of the crew deck, and waited. She didn't have to wait too long, which was lucky, because she was kind of nervous, and she might have talked herself out of it, even though it was clearly the only real solution. Though if it didn't work, she didn't know what she'd do. And then Caleb went into his room, and after giving him a minute to get comfortable, she emerged from the shadows and knocked on his door.
"Come in,"
he called, and she opened the door and stepped inside and pushed it shut behind her, resting against it with her hands behind her back, her tail curling by her knees, waiting. The crew quarters on the ship, formerly known as the Squall Eater, weren't as cramped as those aboard the Mistake, but it was still two beds, bolted to either wall, with a space barely wide enough for a person between them, and just enough room between the beds and the door for a trunk or two, should the crew member be lucky enough to have actual personal belongings. Each bed had a candle holder, bolted to the wall above it, and the room was surprisingly bright, given that only one of them was lit. On one of the beds in this room sat a collection of shiny things, meticulously sorted, and on the other sat Caleb in his shirt sleeves, dancing lights twinkling around his head, thumbing through his spellbook, and looking not nearly as nervous as she felt. That is, until he looked up and saw her, and something in his expression froze.
I thought you were not,
he said, shutting the book and holding it before him in both hands, as if he wasn't quite sure what to do with it.
Ah, she said, I am not.
And she giggled, which she thought was appropriate and not nervous at all. But his smile was tight in return, and her stomach squirmed.
Noted,
he said, still holding his book. And for a moment, the room was quiet, which was weird, because she was never quiet. Not like this. And he was waiting for her to speak, but she didn't know where to start exactly. After a moment of him looking at her expectantly, and her grinning wordlessly at him in return, he said,
So?
Yes,
she said brilliantly, nodding at him. His eyes narrowed, though whether suspicious or confused, she couldn't say. Finally, he said,
So we are one step closer to getting you back to your mother, yeah? That is a good thing.
We are,
she said, delighted, bouncing off the door a little, and his smile warmed in return, reaching his eyes.
She will be so relieved to see us, oh my goodness. I mean, I've sent her a few messages while we've been gone, but I didn't really want to tell her we were pirates, and so there wasn't much to say, you know? So I'm sure she's just dying to know what we've all been up to.
And are you going to tell her?
Caleb asked, and she paused mid-bounce.
Well, she said, maybe not everything, but some things. Some things weren't all bad.
She pressed her lips together as she stared at the deck, trying to think of something she could tell her mother. Maybe about Dashila. Maybe with fewer ghosts. And then Caleb said,
You could tell her about Orly's tattoos.
Oh my gosh, yes,
she said, clutching her face.
Oh man, I really wish I hadn't thrown those jewels away. Imagine if I could have shown her one of them. Oh man, oh man.
We will just have to work hard to get you some more,
Caleb said. And she focused back on his face, and he looked pleased, fondly so. And her knees got a little shaky for no apparent reason, and she pressed her palms into her cheeks, and her palms were sweaty, and her cheeks were getting hot, and if she didn't get things back on track, she'd chicken out, and Jester hated chickening out.
That would be excellent, she said.
And then she took a deep breath, and said, palms still to her cheeks,
But?
And she dragged the word out, as she tried to think of how to say what she wanted to say.
That's not what I came here to talk to you about.
The smile disappeared from his face, a door slamming shut over whatever he was thinking.
Ah,
he said.
So?
She said, slowly and carefully.
About last
night, yes,
he said, setting the book next to him on the bed and folding his hands in front of him, looking maybe towards the toe of her boot or something.
I have been meaning all day to
talk to you about it, she said, encouraged. Right, because
And I wanted to apologize,
he went on,
if I was too forward or took too many liberties.
Well, more like
Or if maybe you had wanted to do something else and I misunderstood.
I think we should practice,
she said in a rush, covering the rush with a bright, perky smile that hopefully said, No big deal, right?
Or perhaps you were offended.
He stopped, his mouth ajar, still staring at some point near her boot. And the dancing lights vanished, and she covered her mouth with one hand to stifle a giggle. His jaw shifted as his head tilted, as if he'd forgotten how to speak.
Kissing, I mean,
she said. And then she had to press her lips together really hard, and she'd rendered Caleb speechless or surprised on many occasions. Made a game of it, really. But he seemed wholly incapable of thought, as if his entire brain, with all its intricacies and busyness and sadness, had ground to a halt. And it was absolutely amazing. After another minute of her beaming, and him making fish faces, a breath of sound escaped him, swift and soft.
Was?
Kissing,
she said again. And then very slowly, almost spelling it out.
You? And me practice kissing.
His mouth opened further, as his eyes narrowed as if he were about to speak. And then he stayed like that for at least another minute, and she watched as the gear slowly began turning again. He finally regained enough sense to close his mouth, and then his eyes slid to the side, and he said, still weak,
"Why?"
"Oh, you know," she said, waving her hand. "I mean, what if it comes up again? On a job or something, I mean," she said.
And he still looked mostly in shock, and she thought things were probably going to be okay. His gaze continued carefully tracing the perimeter of the room.
"So we should... you think we should... practice?"
"Well, here's the thing," she said,
and her hands went behind her back again for a nervous moment, but then she needed them too much to talk.
"So, like, I'm really good at a lot of things, right? Like, really good at a lot of things."
"Yes,"
he said slowly.
"You are."
"Right," she said. "But, so, the thing is, I'm maybe not so good at kissing?"
"Hmm,"
he said.
"Maybe," she said.
And then she felt she should emphasize it.
"Maybe I don't have too much experience with it?"
"Hmm,"
he said again, now turning his head to scout out the wall next to him. And somehow, him looking away gave her an unexpected burst of confidence, because she said,
"Look, I'll tell you a secret."
And he wanted to say something, and she didn't let him.
"Really, I've only been kissed 2 times, but neither one really counted, right? Because the first time it was more about drowning, and this time it was more about not getting killed, and I just really have no idea what I'm doing. And maybe next time we won't be as lucky, and the guard won't believe us so well."
"Are we going to be making a habit of this?"
he asked the ceiling.
"I mean, it worked, so sure," she said. "But really, I just..."
And this wasn't why she was here. It wasn't what she meant to be saying, but it came out anyway.
"Like to know what I'm doing."
Now her hands went behind her back, fingers twisting together nervously, and the tip of her tail was twitching at her knees. He let out his breath in a long, long sigh, his body bending with it, until he was resting his arms on his thighs and his head on his clasped hands, his hair hanging down in a tousle of red waves. She really wanted to reach out and brush it back, but that felt weird and made her stomach even more squirmy, and so she waited until he finally sat up enough for her to watch him rub his face with his hands.
"So,"
he said, voice a little muffled beneath his palms.
"Maybe I shouldn't, but isn't this something you should maybe be doing with Ford?"
His voice climbed in pitch as he said it, and ended with a strange sort of creak, and she didn't quite know what to make of it. And she hadn't considered this question, but the mere thought of it sent her stomach tumbling over itself, and she wasn't sure what he was asking or what she wanted, and she forced herself to remember why she'd come. Why she'd come. And it definitely wasn't to make things even weirder by bringing up Ford. She dug her nails into her palms and forced positivity through her veins until she could say cheerfully, easily,
"Oh, well, here's another thing, you know. I mean, I know he banged Avantika."
She dropped her voice to a low pitch, and she thought she saw his cheeks twitch.
"For the good of the party and everything. But honestly, I don't think Ford really has a lot of experience in this area, actually. So he maybe wouldn't be the best choice."
"Oh,"
he said, weary and maybe a little defeated.
"But you do,"
she said, and was rewarded when his hands finally slid away from in front of his eyes to drag down his cheeks.
"You've had a girlfriend."
He looked at her, fingers still pulling at his skin, showing her the inside of his eyelids, and said,
"Yes."
"And you kissed?"
she said, tilting her head towards him. He kept staring at her.
"Yes."
"And..."
she lifted her chin.
"More?"
He released his face, and now he looked a little less undead, but still with the door slammed shut against her.
We kissed, yes.
She clapped her hands together.
See? You're the perfect teacher.
I don't know about that,
he said. And then he sighed again and squinted at her. Partly incredulous. Partly something else. Or maybe many something else's.
I don't know how one teaches someone to...
Be a good kisser, she supplied.
Right,
he said.
Well, she said. I mean, there's practice.
But the expression on his face told her that was probably going nowhere, at least for now.
But maybe we could just start with you telling me the basics?
The basics,
he repeated.
Of kissing, she said,
nodding very seriously.
I...
She hadn't thought his eyes could go any squintier, but she was wrong.
You put your lips together and then find their lips and...
I know that, she said,
though probably her performance the previous night would beg to differ. She pushed off the door and perched on the corner of Knott's bed, her tail settling along her legs, and his knees instinctively drew away from hers, which was also a bad sign.
Like, how do you do it well?
He rolled his eyes and pressed his lips together in thought, and she had to hold back another giggle, because as reluctant as he was to continue this line of discussion, she'd managed to present him with a problem, and he simply couldn't resist trying to solve it.
It, helps if you like the other person, I suppose,
he said finally, looking out of the corner of his eyes towards the end of his bed.
Really like them, I mean.
Okay, so pretend to like them. Or really like them, she said.
Right,
he said.
And...
He thought for what felt like a really long time, if only because she was incredibly impatient, and still not entirely sure she was going to be able to get him to kiss her, and prove that it wasn't a big deal, and everything was all right. Especially if he kept thinking. But, oh, she wanted to know what he thought.
It's... you just have to learn them,
he said. And he looked at her as he said it, as if he just figured it out for himself.
It takes time, you know. To learn what another person likes, to learn how to kiss them well. It's a specific skill.
Ah,
she said, not quite sure why this made her heart pound in her chest.
What works for one person might not work for another,
he said. And then he added,
I imagine.
And then his gaze slid away from her and back into the recesses of his memory. And he always got so sad when he went there. Unless she managed to ask the right questions. And she was sure this wasn't one of them.
How did Astrid like to be kissed?
To her surprise, he didn't slam the door again. Instead, he leaned back, putting a hand to his chin and studying her. And then he asked,
Why are you so interested in her?
Well?
She searched for an answer. Given that now was probably not the time to tell him that maybe there was a letter from her waiting for them in Zadash.
She's like the only thing I know about you, really. I mean...
And she shifted, sitting on her hands.
Like, I know lots of things about you, right? That sometimes you can be really stinky, and you really like books, and you're really protective of your books, and you love cats, and you're pretty weak.
She looked up at the ceiling, thinking.
And you do magic, and you really love cats, and you're really smart, and I guess maybe you're not so good at shaving, since you asked Yasha to shave you that one time, but that's really more of a guess, you know.
I am perfectly capable of shaving myself,
he said, unoffended.
Well, then I have it on good authority that you know how to shave, she said. And I know you can be pretty funny when you want to be, and...
She wanted to say something about his generosity, about how he was so good about giving things, and how he always seemed so happy when he did. But really, that might have mostly been for her, and that seemed a little too specific.
And you float in the ocean, which, I mean, most people do anyway, she said. You really like fine ink and parchment. Oh, and you're broke, like, all the time. But you really love magic,
so it's worth it to you, I guess. She paused for breath and looked back to him and found him completely unmoved. But of you before all of this? She thought a little more and then said, Nott says you needed help. And Astrid had the perfect nose.
I see,
he said, still looking at her very carefully. Not quite suspicious, not quite puzzled. Just curious, and maybe a little prying. And you know how to waltz, she added.
You know,
he said, almost as if he hadn't heard her.
It's a strange thing, because I have spent so many years avoiding people and avoiding being seen and not wanting to be seen and not asking questions so that no one will question me in return, and yet here you are,
he said. And he tilted his head the other way, clasping his hands and pulling up his knee until his foot rested on the edge of the bed.
It is very disconcerting.
Oh, she said, and she leaned forward and dropped her chin and gave him her best bad cop interrogation stare.
Well, you know me. I'm a very good investigator.
To her surprise, he matched her, lean for lean, chin for chin, stare for stare. And now their knees were almost touching, and she rested her elbows on her knees and her chin on her hands to stop them trembling. And he matched that too. And they were close again. Close enough for her to see the faint red in his cheeks. But his gaze was steady and calm and incisive. And for the first time in her life, she felt stripped away. Almost as if she hadn't realized there was anything underneath for someone to find until he...
You,
he said, his voice quiet and low and a little cocky.
Don't want anyone to worry about you. You don't want to cause trouble or be trouble for anyone. Not trouble like the chaos you like to cause, but you,
he said.
You want to help everyone, and you don't want anyone to be worried about you, because it might make them sad, and you only want them to be happy. You're very generous,
he said,
but also a little selfish. And you are very new to the world, and yet, every time it disappoints you, you somehow manage to turn it on its head, at least so far as anyone else can see. But things hurt you, and make you sad,
he said. And for a moment, a flash of pain crossed his face. Pain for her sake. And she wanted to fight him tooth and nail on that point, but was too breathless to do so.
And it's all right to be sad, Jester.
Not if it makes someone else sad, she thought, which was ridiculous. Of course she knew it was okay to be sad. But instead, she just shook her head a little, and he smiled, briefly, and straightened away from her, though their knees were still close.
You're sad too, she said,
sitting up and sitting on her hands again, almost lashing out. You're sad, and you're lonely, and something is eating you up inside, and it's really hungry. The cockiness in his expression wavered, but he simply said,
Yes.
She studied him, and she knew she was worried, and probably looked worried, but she didn't know what to do with everything he'd handed her. And so, as always, she turned it back on itself.
So what would make you happy?
He smiled again, and it was so sad a thing to see, and he didn't answer. And somehow, that just made her heart hurt more, and that just made her frustrated and determined, and she'd come here for a reason, and that reason wasn't to be told that he knew her better than anyone other than the Traveler, and her mother, and maybe even a little better than her mother after all they'd been through, and that scared her more than anything. So she said, reckless and challenging,
I bet practicing kissing would at least cheer you up.
No,
he said, and the door slammed shut with it.
But you're so good at it,
she said, almost whining. Too proud to beg, but hoping that maybe he'd do something to make things normal again.
Jester,
he said,
I'm not going to kiss you.
Why not?
She asked. And then, before she could even really think about it, she said,
Don't you want to?
She felt herself cross the line, like an alarm she hadn't known was there, until she heard the tick of its invisible trigger.
hadn't realized how tightly he'd wound it, until she felt it snap. Her words hung in the silent, still air between them, and he looked at her as if she'd just set fire to the ship around them. And she didn't want to snatch them back, but she also thought maybe she ought to just go, maybe. If only to escape the way he looked at her. More and more like a man desperate and drowning. But as soon as she shifted her hands out from underneath her, he was on his feet, stalking to the corner of the room with his hands in his hair, and she could only watch as he stood there with his shoulders hunched. And then he made a sound like a piece of parchment being ripped in two, and turned back to her with fire in his eyes.
"I,"
he said, breathing heavily, the door of his guard blown open, staring at her with a depth of loathing she hadn't even begun to expect.
"I'm a liar. I am a thief,"
he said, and his hands dropped to his sides. And the loathing wasn't for her, not in the slightest, and her chest went tight, and he clenched his fists and said, his eyes losing focus, more to himself than to her,
"I am a murderer."
"Not only,"
she said, surprising herself with her own voice, surprising him too, and the firebolt intensity of his gaze was back on her.
"Not only those things, Caleb."
His lip curled.
"You don't understand,"
he said.
"No," she said.
And then suddenly she was on her feet and angry.
"You're right. I don't know your past or who you were then, but I know you now, and you do good things too. I told you."
He flinched, and she said,
"You're not just capable of good. You do good. And you take care of people."
"I am very selfish,"
he said, his voice low and dangerous, staring at her as if willing her to believe him. And for a moment, she saw him and Ford spilling their blood into Shilla's lair. And she thought he was right. And she suddenly knew that if he was right, then he would never be happy again. Not really. And her hackles went up.
"Sometimes, sure," she said,
and then barreled on before he could look relieved.
"But you take care of Nott, and was it selfishness when you came and rescued us from Lorenzo? And you've always taken care of me."
And her voice wavered on that, too specific and too true.
"Because we're friends, Caleb. And you might not want to admit it, but we are, and you do good. You are good, Caleb,"
she said, but he was shaking his head.
"You can't—"
"Stop telling me what I can and can't do, Caleb Widogast,"
she said, hammering each syllable in her best impression of his voice. And he froze, eyes locked with hers. And the thing inside him might have been hungry, but she was very strong.
"I can say you're good if I want to, and I do want to say it, because it's true, and I have proof."
She paused for breath, almost glaring at him as he almost glared right back. Because glaring was easier than. And she was hot, and the room was hot, and the candlelight was too little, too bright. And she tried to take a breath, but the air was too thick. And she'd maybe been yelling a little, and maybe someone else had heard them, and the walls felt like a vice around her. And if she didn't do something to ease the tension, she was going to pop.
"Besides,"
she said, forcing the words out as lightly as she could. Which was pretty lightly, but she knew. Not at all convincing.
"Nott will back me up, and we're the best investigators there are."
He wanted to believe her. She saw it in the slackness in his face, the hard swallow in his throat, the helpless grasping of his hands at his sides. He wanted to believe her so badly, almost hungered for it as much as whatever it was hungered for him. But not enough. Not enough. And she couldn't pull him free by herself. And she wanted to scream or cry with frustration, maybe both, and he could tell. And she knew he could tell in the way he was almost reaching for her, in the tragedy in his eyes, because she wasn't bothering to hide it, because he'd see through it anyway. And no one who wasn't imaginary, or a god, or both, had ever seen her like this, and there was too much truth in too small a space, and she didn't know how to escape it, and wasn't even sure she wanted to. Oh, she wanted to be known. Hungered for it. Hadn't realized how much until she'd seen it dangled before her in his eyes, just as she dangled goodness before him. tantalizing, but just out of reach. Unless one or the other of them took the step. She took a dry breath, licked her suddenly chapped lips. Anyway, she said, with a little toss of her head, as if it didn't matter at all. And he smiled painfully, and she wanted that too.
But maybe you're right. Maybe you are selfish.
And she looked down at her shoulder before she could see his reaction.
Like, super selfish. I mean, you won't even teach me how to kiss correctly.
I am,
he said, after a pause, his voice hoarse and quiet and hard and soft all at once, and she couldn't suppress a shiver.
Very selfish.
She glanced at him out of the corner of her eye, and he was watching her very carefully. So carefully. Not at all hesitant or unsure. Simply waiting for her to decide, and memorizing her in the meantime. And, oh, she didn't understand how she could feel his gaze on every inch of her skin like a physical thing. Hadn't known what wanting was, really. Her stomach turned into something ravenous, and her fingers tingling, and her cheeks hot, and her heart pounding in her ears. And he was waiting for her. Would do whatever she decided. And the power that came with that surrender made her head almost feel like she was floating. She could decide anything. She wanted too many things, and so many of them were out of her grasp now. This definitely didn't qualify as back to normal. But this was better, maybe, or 1,000 times worse, dying by inches as the ship burned around them, maybe, or maybe not. She swallowed and looked down again.
You never answered to my question, she said, and flicked her gaze up to meet his.
He reacted as if she'd struck him with lightning, if only for a moment. And then he was calm, standing straight, lifting his chin in understanding. Relaxed almost, except for the burning in his eyes as he looked at her. And suddenly she thought she didn't know anything of wanting, not compared to this. And part of her was suddenly terrified, but more of her wanted to learn.
I did not,
he said, and he was too generous, giving her too many chances to walk away. But if she walked away now, she'd give up the fight against whatever his demons were. And more than that, she'd give up a piece of herself she hadn't realized he had. And oh, he was selfish, but she was selfish too. She looked at him, square in the eye, met his searing gaze with her chin held high. But her knees were trembling, and her voice came out a whisper.
Don't you?
She thought she saw his heartbreak in the asking, but maybe his eyes were just a mirror of her own. She waited, caught in the stillness of the spell of her question, and then he broke it with a step.
I am,
he said.
A liar.
And he took another step, and she kept her head high, waiting.
I am a thief,
he said, and she wanted to close her eyes as he approached, but she held his gaze instead.
I am a murderer,
he said, and his voice broke on the word as he closed the distance between them, and she watched his face as he stripped the layers of his guard away and threw them at her feet. And to know, as she was known...
But,
he whispered, his voice passing through her with all the force of thunder.
I will not lie to you.
Her lips parted and her eyes closed, and she waited. And for a moment, nothing happened. And then she felt the tender brush of fingers against her forehead, parting her hair. And then gently, so gently, running along the base of her horn. And she hadn't known that would feel so. And then his fingers slid down her cheek, and he rested his palm there. And she leaned into it, into the warmth of it. And then there was pressure, just enough to lift her chin. And there, his lips were against hers. But this time they were soft and inviting, testing the give and take of her own, and she didn't know what to do, so she just stood as perfectly still as she could with her trembling knees, her trembling everything, as he kissed her over and over again. Soft, light kisses, and every time he drew back a little, she found herself leaning more and more into his palm, until she couldn't bear it, until her hands sought his waist of their own accord and tugged on his shirt, and she felt him chuckle, and she was torn between grinning and pouting, and he kissed her bottom lip as if he knew, teasing and perfect. The next time his lips brushed hers, she leaned into it, pushing to her tiptoes in order to give herself a little more force. But of course she was very strong, and so he stumbled, and she yanked him back by the shirt. And suddenly they were pressed together, and her lips parted a little as she caught her breath, and his hand slipped back into her hair and pulled her mouth back to his. But now their lips were sort of caught between each other, and if before he'd been a banked fire, then this was the log that brought it back to life. And in a moment, his fingers were tangled in her hair, and more surprisingly, hers were in his without her ever really thinking about it. His hair was maybe a little greasy, but thick and surprisingly fine, and it felt good between her fingers. And more than that, his mouth felt good, warm and kind of wet, which was kind of weird, except, more than that, good. Oh, and she couldn't keep up with how he was kissing her. Now hard, as if he could devour her. Now painfully, exquisitely slow, as if he wanted nothing more than to linger against her for an eternity. And he might have said it took time to learn somebody, but she thought he must have figured her out pretty quickly. And maybe it was just because she didn't know what she was doing, or maybe he was just a quick study. She couldn't think straight enough to even start learning him, could only run her hands through his hair, down his neck, over his shoulders, grasping his shirt and pulling him closer, even as they gasped for breath between kisses, her tail somewhere along his leg. And hey, she couldn't be too bad at this, since they were still doing it, and he seemed even more eager than when they'd started. And how long, she almost wondered. But then he slid a hand down her spine to the small of her back and pulled her into him. And oh, that was the fire of his skin, only a few scant layers of clothing away from hers. And he was flicking his tongue against her lips, and she wasn't quite sure where that would go, but she was pretty sure only good places, too. But closer. Closer was good. And so without quite knowing what she was doing, she slid one of her legs around his, until his was between hers, and hers was between his. And oh, that was his. And oh, that was a lot. Oh, good, but a lot. Good, but maybe. He broke off the kiss abruptly and took a full step away from her, and she faltered after him, and his hands came up against her shoulders and held her there, held her away. His head hung low, and the air that had been so hot and stifling before suddenly felt like ice in comparison. In the silence, she heard the heaving of his breath and the shallow panting of her own. But distantly, underneath the rush of blood in her ears. And, oh, he really wanted to kiss her. Really wanted to kiss her. And she wanted. He looked up at her, and she looked back at him, suddenly terrified and unsure and unknowing. And she watched him read her face, watched him maybe misunderstand. And she shook her head a little. No. No regrets. Only maybe. But maybe not. And he looked like a man dying of thirst, given salt water to drink, she thought wildly. Though of course that wasn't right. But something was wrong, and it wasn't her, and it wasn't him. But it was something in between. The thing eating at him, or something else. But what else it could be, she didn't know. And suddenly, she knew exactly what she wanted. Wanted to hold him. Wanted him to hold her. Wanted to hang on to each other and wait the fire out. To rebuild from the ashes together. But instead he shook his head and placed a palm on each of her cheeks and pulled her in for another kiss. Long and slow and apologetic, even as he poured everything into it. Everything, but not enough. But she wanted him anyway, and she tried to tell him this as she kissed him back, hands on his neck, fingers twisting in his hair, as if she could hold him there by sheer force of will alone. But eventually he withdrew, and she looked at him and thought, maybe he had understood. But she was so new at kissing, and really, now she didn't even know if she was good at it or not. And she hiccuped a laugh that got caught as a sob in her throat, and he closed his eyes against the sound, his hand still cupping her face, unwilling to let go. She closed her eyes and leaned into his palm. You don't have to. But a moment later, she felt him sigh, and his hands dropped away. She didn't open her eyes. She didn't dare, lest she start to cry. He probably knew she wanted to cry anyway, and so she forced herself to smile instead. Fingers touched her cheek, lingering again, and then his lips brushed her forehead, and he was gone from her. And a few footsteps later, he was gone from the room, and she was alone, and she wanted. She didn't know how long she stood there, staring at the candle over his bed, eyes dry, fists clenched, trembling and aching and wanting and mad, afraid of all the newness inside her, the places where things no longer fit as they once had. And then a voice said, confused and slow,
Jester?
Not, she said, and her hands flew to her cheeks. Not as hot, not anymore, thank the traveler. What are you? This is your room, she said, as sense came back to her head. Right. Sorry, I'll just...
Are you all right?
Not said, and she had to take a deep breath against the hysterical laughter in her chest. I'm fine, she said, which was more or less true. But while Caleb might have been a liar, don't think about him, don't think about him, don't think about him, don't wonder what lies he's already told. She was an excellent liar, and the smile she gave Nott was genuine.
I was just thinking how pretty that little candle is, all by itself on that great big wall, you know?
I see,
said Nott, a little skeptical. And come to think of it, she hadn't expressed much of an opinion on fire either way, and maybe she hated it too.
Have you seen Caleb?
Oh, yes,
she said, and for a moment words failed her, but she grinned through it.
He was here, and we were talking, but then he had to go check something. You know how he is,
she said, with a wave of her hand, and that hurt something in her chest too.
You say something, and he thinks of something, and just walks away to do it.
That does sound like Caleb,
Nott said, and then her eyes narrowed a bit.
I saw him right before I came down, and it looks like whatever you said made him want to lean over the railing like he was going to be sick.
He was alone. His choice. She still had to choose. She shrugged.
Maybe dinner didn't agree with him.
Maybe,
Nott said. Eyes still a little narrow.
I mean, fresh fruit for the first time in a month. My God, it's a miracle we don't all have the runs.
Right, Jester said, with an emphatic nod of agreement. Anyway, speaking of, maybe I should go. Good night.
She skipped out of the room before Nott could reply, pulling the door closed as she went, and went straight to her room and climbed over Beau as she was doing her nightly stretches.
Hey!
And got into bed and pulled the covers over her head and squeezed her eyes shut and willed sleep to come.
Jester?
Or if not sleep, then at least the traveler. You okay?
Yeah, just tired, she said,
her breath hot against her face.
Busy day, running all over the ship. Good night.
A pause, and then she could almost see Beau shrugging as she said, Night. And then she was alone with Beau's deep breathing and occasional grunts, as her only distraction from her own thoughts, and it wasn't much of a lullaby at all. She wanted her mother. She needed to sleep. Caleb had a spell for that. Caleb, with his spells and his secrets and his cat. And did she even like cats? She had a weasel and a dog. That couldn't possibly end well. But he kissed her like she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever touched. And that was... A lot. When she hadn't even known she wanted to kiss him at all when she'd walked in the room. And now... now it was going to be a long night. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. The door behind her suddenly gave way, and a familiar voice said,
Chester.
Oh, she said, dazed and blinking awake, as she lay with her back on the floor. Good morning.
Chester,
Nott said, her face coming into view as she crouched over her.
What are you doing in our...
Intruder!
Came Caleb's sleep-startled voice from the corner of the room. Rough and panicked, and yep, still heartbreaking. And she sighed.
It's just Chester. She fell in the door when I tried to open it,
Nott said.
Chester, it's not even dawn. What are you...
What are you doing up? She countered.
Going to see what I can steal from the rest of the crew while they're sleeping,
Nott said, as if this were the most obvious thing in the world. Chester frowned, and she added,
I give it back. Most of it,
she amended.
Gotta keep the skills sharp somehow, right?
Chester,
Caleb said, and it wasn't a question.
Can I talk to Caleb, please?
Chester said. Or maybe more mumbled, because it wasn't even dawn yet, and she didn't want to wake anyone else up if she could help it.
Sure,
Nott said. And then she looked back to the room and said,
I mean, if you're up.
I'm up,
Caleb said, sounding maybe a little resigned.
Go do your thieving.
Chester sat up and scooted along the outer wall, being sure to stay on a patch in front of their room and not somebody else's. Nott looked at her for a moment and then leaned in close.
You sure you're all right?
I'm fine, she said, which was mostly true, though her neck was stiff and her shoulders were sore,
and her lips were currently not being kissed, which, it turned out, was a whole new kind of unpleasantness she hadn't expected.
Just give us a minute, okay?
Nat's eyebrows went up, and her eyes brightened, and Chester said, or maybe begged a little,
Please?
If you insist,
the goblin said, and then she pulled up the hood of her cloak and vanished into the shadows. Chester hugged her knees to her chest, her tail wrapped around her legs. The quiet creak of the ship, as it shifted in the water, hid Nott's footsteps, and a good minute passed before she heard Caleb's as he rounded the door and settled next to her, not quite close enough to touch.
Good morning,
he said courteously. She didn't dare look at him.
Good morning, she said. How did you sleep?
A breath in. A shift of some kind, and then...
Not particularly well.
She said, nodding in sympathy. Then she took a deep breath and closed her eyes and said,
How do you feel?
Another minute of silence, and then he said,
How do you feel?
I don't know, she said,
desperately grateful he'd asked, because he was the person she talked to about these sorts of things, feelings and such, and she didn't know what she'd do if she couldn't anymore.
It's a lot, you know. Like, a lot.
Yes,
he said.
You're a lot, she said.
His breath caught for a moment.
Yes.
And I don't know what to do, she said. I just wanted things to be normal, because I was afraid I'd make them weird, and now... Are we going to be okay?
She didn't quite turn her head to look at him. Could only see maybe his shoulder out of the corner of her eye. Caught a glimpse of his profile. One wrist rested on a bent knee, and his other foot, bare, came into her peripheral vision as he straightened his leg. She found herself looking at his toes, and she'd never really looked at someone else's toes before. And she wondered, while he thought, if when you loved someone, you really wanted to know every part of them, even their toes, even their toenails, so that you could love them too. No one wrote poems about toenails, at least not that she'd read. Maybe someone should. Caleb's toes weren't too bad. Surprisingly clean. Not too hairy.
I think,
he said. And even after having all that time to think about what he wanted to say, he still changed course.
That I... It is not new,
he said.
To me, and so I can... I have learned to live with it. Normal is not... This is... it for me.
Oh, she said. And she wanted to ask how long, but wasn't sure she was ready for the answer.
But for you, I understand,
he said.
And not knowing what you want.
I know what I want,
she said. And he went very, very still. Even his toes. She liked them.
Do you?
He said, his voice very low. She felt her face crumple.
No,
she said plaintively, maybe a little too loudly. And she hushed herself.
Not if you don't.
I do.
And then he stopped. And then he said,
anyway, you don't have to decide now if you don't want to. I can...
Wait?
She asked. And he shrugged again and said nothing. Wait for a no, and things carried on as they had been, and she hadn't even known it. Wait for a yes, and then what?
And if I decide I want to... practice? Some more?
The ship creaked quietly as he drew in a long, slow breath. And then he said, very lightly, in that wonderful way that he had when he stopped taking himself so seriously,
well, you are a very good kisser.
She laughed at that, quietly, and her heart hammered painfully in her chest, and she said,
and if I want more?
He sighed, and his jollity went with it.
I am very selfish,
he said, and she went hot all over again.
Chester, I have things I want, things I must do, things that are more important than...
But he couldn't say it. She felt him fight to find the words.
I do not know how much I could give you,
he said finally. And it wasn't a no, and that terrified her.
But you could try, she said.
You deserve.
But if I want, she said. And then she said, don't try to tell me what I want, Caleb.
I don't want to,
he said.
I want you to.
And then he stopped, and she thought he was a little terrified, too. If I want, she said again. And she felt him tense beside her, and she waited. Looked back to his toes, then to her knees, fighting every instinct she had to interrupt, or joke, or flee, or cry. Waiting. And she was usually very good at waiting. But this was different. Because if this came out wrong, she didn't know what... The breath left him, long and quiet and slow, and took the fight with it. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw him bow his head.
For you,
he said, very slowly.
If you want, I could try.
She caught her breath, and he said,
Chester, I don't...
I'll let you know,
she said, standing before he could cut off his nose to spite his face, as he was so wont to do.
What I decide.
She finally looked at him, looked down at him, at the top of his head and the resignation in every inch of his body, and wondered, for a moment, if the fight would be worth it. And then she thought of his hair between her fingers and his hands around her waist, and more than that, the look on his face when he'd given her the inkpot, invited her into his tiny hut for the first time, offered her money when he had none to give. He was worth it, even if he didn't believe it himself. But she didn't know if she could fight without him at her back, and... She didn't have to decide now. And then he looked up at her, and he was... really hot. Like, when did he get so hot? And she definitely shouldn't decide right now.
Anyway, she said, good morning. Sorry to wake you. Have a good day.
He smiled at her with weary eyes.
The same to you.
She felt his gaze follow her as she walked the length of the passageway. Felt it lingering on her heels as she climbed the stairs to the deck above. She emerged in the salty, stinky air of the Nicodranas docks, a fresh morning breeze with dead fish on it, blowing her hair back from her face, the sky gray with the coming dawn. The docks were already alive on either side of them, empty berths preparing to receive ships ready for rest, other ships readying to sail with the sun. She took a deep breath, got past the worst of the initial gag, and thought, okay. And that felt okay. And when the sun came up, they could go talk to the Zalezo, and then she could go talk to her mother, and that would help too. And then she could decide, maybe. Or maybe not. He'd wait either way, and she wasn't the only one in the fight after all. Nat and Bo were in it too, and probably Yasha, and Caduceus, inasmuch as he preferred inner peace to conflict. And if Ford, oh Ford, could keep his head on straight, he'd help too. She had time, at least a little of it. At least assuming they didn't do anything in the next few hours to get themselves thrown into life-or-death danger, or permanently banished from the Menagerie Coast. Which was a gamble, to be honest, but one she was willing to take. One she had to take, because whatever she chose, she had to be sure. One way or another, she'd have to decide. And until then? Well, at least she knew she was a very good kisser. End of story. Thanks for listening.